Bridger's face, white with terror in my imagination, made me freeze. I did not want to lie to them, reader. Not to Utopia. I did not want to lie, but for what hides in that one house, I was prepared to force myself. It took some breaths for me to realize that no lies were needed. I have no idea. I can't think of anything to connect that Bosch to Black Sakura, or the Gaiji's device, or internal Mitsubishi politics in any way. What I do know is that we need to protect that Bosch house more than anywhere on Earth. Martin, I trust. Martin is gentle. But now the public knows one half of what's happened. If they find out the other half, and the public screams for a big, showy investigation of the Sanir Weeksbooth Bosch, it will... I can't overstate how much it could disrupt. I paused. The numbers in the censor's sanctum rose blood red in my mind. 33-67, 67-33, 29-71. Should I break confidence? Commit the well-intentioned treason of leaking from that most inviolate of Romanova's offices? Or could I make my fears clear without treason? There are elements of this which align with predictions made by members of the Mardi Bosch. Digital eyes showed neither warmth nor judgment. What do you see in that? I don't know, I answered. Disrupting the cars hurts everyone. I can't even say it hurts the humanists and Mitsubishi most, because the Masons and Cousins have more members, so use the system that much more. The only hive it doesn't hurt is you. They stared at me, both of them exchanging silent data behind their visors, though whether with one another or with distant members of their constellation, I could not say. They were the only ones immune. They, aloof in their separate transit system, had no interest in the Bosch which pumped the lifeblood of six hives through Earth's broad skies, six but not seven. I told you, reader, that Utopia does not give up on dreams. When a utopian dies of anything, the cause is marked and not forgotten until solved. A fall, they rebuild the site to make it safe. A criminal, they do not rest until he is rendered harmless. An illness? It is researched until cured, regardless of the time, the cost, over generations, if need be. A car crash? They create their separate system, slower, less efficient, costing hours, but which has never cost a single life. Even for suicide, they track the cause, and so patiently, blade by blade, disarm death. Death, of course, has many weapons. And if they have deprived him of 100 million, he still has enough at hand to keep them mortal. For now. You really thought it was us, didn't you? The itch of a tear on my cheek made me realize for the first time that, yes, I had thought it was them. Feared it was them, deep down inside, where thoughts aren't words yet. Relief's catharsis washed over me. It wasn't them. It was some viper from the familiar pit putting its fangs to use. Even if a constellation takes a viper's shape to brave the pit, the starlight holds no venom. Aldrin had her U-beast stow its screen. We've set watch over the tracker system. When the next hex is cast, we will know almost instantly and send in Romanova. The second strike will be the last. I laughed inside. Next, they will deprive death of the Canner device. I was right 13 years ago not to even try to buy the real thing. The packaging could deceive long term, but if I had used the device itself, Utopia in anger would have had me on the second day. It isn't only the Utopians who become a little more immortal with every blade they take away. It isn't only they who delight in seeing unicorns and wing rays in the street, who gaze through griffin cloth into enchanting nowheres, and ride their shuttles to the brave, bare moon, which their efforts make a little less bare every day. We all enjoy these wonders, all of us. Reader, you should not have barred Apollo Mojave from the Pantheon. Chapter the 14th. The interlude of the interview with retired Black Sakura reporter Tsuneo Sugiyama, as related by Martin Guildbreaker. Mycroft Canner asked me to relate this interview, since they were at President Ganymede's party at the time and did not witness it. Mycroft is very worried that, after having a different guide for one chapter, the reader will be unwilling to trust a criminal again. So they asked me to state clearly from the start, I will author only this chapter. And afterward, Mycroft will carry on. Mycroft insists that I introduce myself, my bash, and family first, in accordance with period custom, though I note that Mycroft broke that rule themselves. My birth name is Mycroft Guildbreaker. I do not know why the Porphyrogene, J.E.D.D. Mason, during his sixth year, began to call me Martin, but I have now been known by that nickname for 15 years. I am 32 years old, born July 2nd, 2422. The Confraternidomitor Bash, in English, Guild Breaker, is an hereditary bash, founded in 2177 and unbroken since. My biological parents are Minister Charlemagne Guildbreaker, Jr., and August Guildbreaker, currently Romanovan Praetor for the Masonic Hive, and formerly personal secretary to Emperor Aeneas Mason. Mycroft wanted to use Empress for female Masons, but I find Mycroft's gendered language disruptive, and have restored the customary Emperor, both in this chapter and Mycroft's earlier discussion of Agrippa Mason. Both my parents are descended from previous emperors or their bossibs, one from Tiber Mason, and the other from a sibling of Antonine Mason. While the other 7 Bapas in my birth bash are third-generation Masons at the least. I took the adulthood competency exam in my 15th year, immediately became a familiaris of the emperor, undertook my annus dialogorum, and on its completion became, on the same day, Mason, a nepos of the emperor, and minister to the Porphyrogene, child of the emperor, who was then 4 years of age. I studied at the August Polylegal College of the Alexandrian campus, graduating at 25, and have thus far held all the offices of the cursus honorum at the expected ages. The new generation of my bash was formalized when I was 20, and contains 7 members, including 4 Bossibs born to the Guildbreaker name and 3 friends from the Alexandrian campus. One of them, from a Chinese Mitsubishi bash, became my spouse, now Shaolyo Guildbreaker, a familiaris, counsel to the emperor, and proud to be the first person not raised in a Masonic bash to have joined the Guildbreaker bash in 4 generations. We have 3 children, Aeneas, Lissa, and An, and 4 other Ba kids born of our 4 bashmates, though I confess myself something of a stranger to most of them since I am a vocateur, and my duties to the young Porphyrogene mean that I spend more hours in their bash than in my own. Though it is illegal to speculate about such things, I know I have been widely discussed as a potential successor to the current emperor. I place no stock in such rumors. A dissatisfied Mycroft now insists that I append something more vivid about myself, a scene or anecdote to enliven this list of flat facts. If there is a keystone event of my fortunes, it was the night in my 14th year when I exchanged my first adult words with my emperor. I was waiting for my bapas in a small courtyard garden in the imperial palace. I was not aware at the time, but it was a grim day for Cornell Mason, since familiaris Calavine Acton had just confessed to the Amador treason, so Caesar was considering the first exercise of their capital power. This is also why my bapas were at the palace well past midnight. I remember a little fountain which was partly clogged, so that a faint spray shot sideways onto a bench. The damp of the stone felt good as I sat, though I was cold, because it made me very aware of my body. I did not notice the emperor until they spoke. "What can a child of your age have to think about that makes you look so much more serious than I myself?" I remember looking up that Mason was at first just an immense dark shape, like a pillar merging the black of the earth with the black of the sky. But as I watched, the spraying water made glints of light spread along their suit, as if the stars and city lights of the capital were mingling and multiplying in the new space offered by this living being. Caesar's words I remember verbatim, but my own stumbling responses I do not. I answered that I was trying to decide when to undertake my annus de legorum. I have no doubt that the custom will outlast these words, but to please Mycroft, I will explain. When an aspiring mason has passed the adulthood competency exam and completed the initial courses in Masonic law and government, the initiate is clothed for a year in a suit of pure white and undertakes the year of debate, engaging a different person each day in discussion of what it means to be a mason. After 366 debates, if the initiate still wishes to join the empire, there is no further test. "If you have doubt about becoming a mason," Mason answered, "the annus de legorum will settle it." I approximate my answer. "That isn't it, Caesar. There's no doubt I will be a mason. I can't wait to start speaking Latin and using an understanding power and serving you. But I know I'm very young. If I do my annus de legorum now, I'll understand less than if I wait until I'm older, and learn less from it about what it really means to be a mason. I want to be a mason now, but I don't want to waste the annus, since I only get to do it once." Mason's next words were not to me, but to an aide, commanding that my bapas be summoned to witness my investiture as an imperial nepos. That very night, I will not say in my honor, Cornell Mason created the Ordo Vitae de Legorum, the Order of the Life of Debate. Membership is open to all Masons, and marked by one white sleeve, a permanent invitation to engage the wearer in debate over the Masonic life, not for a year, but lifelong. I wear it proudly. That night, too, the title of Familiaris was promised to me upon my passing the adulthood competency exam, since, by alliance law, a minor may not subject themselves to Caesar's force. I had long desired, even expected, these honors, but each in their course as I earned them, not all in one breath. I asked Caesar in some bewilderment why they granted me so much so quickly. This was my true investiture. "I have use for you. You will be my instrument, my touch, my voice, my proxy while my work keeps me away. The one Masonic influence to counter all the others. You will teach and guide my son." That night, I met the Porphyrogene. The first stage of my investigation of the Black Sakura and Senir Weeksbooth double break-in has already been related. At 1757 Universal Time, on March 24th, 2454, I requested permission to interview Tsunio Sugiyama, preferring to conduct the interview in person rather than over the tracker system. I was invited to the Sugiyama residence outside Kanazawa in the Ishikawa prefecture of Chubu and arrived at 1931 Universal Time. The Sugiyama Bash House is a compact townhouse, three stories, pressed tightly on both sides by similar houses. Tsunio Sugiyama is 89 years old, female, 162 centimeters tall, dark brown eyes, short grayish-white hair, with distinctly yellowed front teeth. No other distinguishing marks. Sugiyama wore a Japanese-cut Mitsubishi suit, green, with a spring pattern of morning glories climbing bamboo.